Morning, everybody. On 81, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Hope you had a good weekend. Coming up, a review of 4,000 Miles, the second of two plays in the festival at Center Stage that focuses on the work of Amy Herzog. Tells the story of a grandmother who shares her New York apartment with her 20-something grandson for a few weeks and how the generational dynamics play out between them. But first, a conversation about how generational dynamics are playing out across America with an author from Tacoma Park who has been studying the ways older people are coping with the challenges of living independently. Beth Baker's first book examined how nursing homes are being transformed. Her latest book looks at how people are, in many cases, avoiding institutional care completely. As she points out, in 1900, only 4% of Americans were over the age of 65. Well, in 5 years, that number will swell to 17%, and high housing costs will put nearly half of America's 72 million baby boomers at risk of busting their budgets. But living independently doesn't have to mean living alone. The book is called With a Little Help from Our Friends, Creating Community as We Grow Older. And Beth Baker joins me this morning in Studio A. Good morning. It's good to meet
you. Hi. Thanks for having me.
So this is a fascinating book. You talk about, for example, there's a $100 billion industry of anti-aging products.
Yes. You know?
And we really, you write about how we're in denial about how many of us are getting older and how many of us are going to need some help in the not too distant future. So I wonder, is this book in part kind of a clarion call to figure out how to deal with this?
It's definitely a clarion call. And I like to always say denial is not our friend.
Yeah.
And the more we plan for our future, the better off we're going to be. And part of that is how we live. And that's really what I focus on in the book.
And a lot of people want to live, in the term of art is aging in place.
Yes, which I also sort of push back against, because aging in place is only as good as the place you're aging in. And if that place leaves you lonely and isolated, it might not be the best place. So I prefer the notion of aging in community, however we define community.
Mm-hmm. It's simply unsustainable for 72 million of us. And I'm a baby boomer. You're a baby boomer. Those of us born between 1946 and 1964, it's unsustainable for all of us to live in our own homes for the rest of our lives, right?
Especially when we need assistance. It's really unsustainable. And one thing I really tried to do with the book is find affordable options for people. I wasn't interested in writing a book that only the 10%ers could could live out. And a lot of the options were quite affordable.
Now, the concept of retirement living, you write, came on the scene in 1955. And the irony of the fact that it was invented in a place called Youngstown, Arizona, didn't escape me. And then in the 70s, we had this notion of assisted living, right? That's a $54 billion industry. Mm-hmm. So this is big bucks putting into this thing. And the assisted living model is very popular, but it's not really for everybody, either because their financial resources don't allow it or they just don't prefer it. So you're looking at all these different solutions, and we'll talk about some of them just in a second. But with all the different ways you looked at it, do they all have certain things in common?
I think they have the certain values in common. One is understanding the importance of relationship and community, not only to our mental health, but to our physical health. Everything we're learning about successful aging says loneliness is our enemy that you want to avoid. Mm-hmm. And they also, at the same time, allow people to continue to be autonomous and independent. So having those two things, the relationships and the independence, I think are the themes that go through the book and all these models.
You write about a place called The Village right over down 95 in Washington, Capitol Hill. There are 360 people living in 265 households. What is The Village model?
The Village model, there's 150 already around the country and an equal number being created. And it's basically a neighbors helping neighbors membership organization. So for people that really want to stay put but are worried they might be lonely, this is a great model. And the Washington area is a real hub of these villages. And there's a couple in Baltimore and a few more being organized.
So it's sort of an organized, sort of official way. I mean, they have an executive director. They have somebody whose job it is to make sure that people are being tended to. Is this the kind of thing that people sort of used to do? People used to be neighborly just because it was the neighborly thing to do. Now it's being codified a little more?
I think that's true. And these organizations don't help people with medical care. It's things like, do you need a ride to the movies at night? Do you, anything you can think of that's non-medical, these villages can do. And they often connect people across generations, which is also really great.
You told the story of a lady who's 100 years old, and she was in the mood for pizza.
Yes.
And she couldn't finish a whole pizza by herself, so she found some people to share a pizza
She called the village, and they went and got a pizza, had it for lunch, and took her a couple of slices.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you talk about a model called co-housing, and there are more than 100 of these communities that have been completed in 37 different states.
Mm-hmm.
One of the advantages is that they use about half of the amount of land that a regular subdivision would use. So what is a co-housing community?
Co-housing is
like?
Probably the most ambitious model I write about. It's a true intentional community. So people come together. They usually build the community from scratch or retrofit buildings. And each has a smaller living space than we might think of, but a full space with their own kitchens and everything. And then they have very generous common spaces, big enough so if they want to have dinner once a week together, they can. It's kind of having built-in friends and neighbors. So people who live there are really wanting a strong community. They make all their own decisions. And this is one of the hallmarks also of what I write about compared to what we think of as traditional retirement communities. These are grassroots created led. They don't want a lot of people telling them what rules they have to obey. It's people really creating lives for themselves that they are happy with.
Beth Baker, the book is called With a Little Help from Our Friends, Creating Community as We Grow Older on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So with a place like that, with a community like the co-housing model, is it like a fraternity in a sorority? Can they kick people out if they don't like them? Or can they refuse entrance to people?
No. It's legally like a condo.
Mm-hmm.
So people buy there, usually. Sometimes they're renters. They buy a unit or they have a lease. And it's just like you would think of a condo, except the decision-making is consensus, meaning they decide things together as a group until everybody can kind of live with the decision. They have meals together, as I mentioned, usually at least once a week. There's a lot of community gardens. It's just much more of a sense of community ownership. But think of it more like a condo than a fraternity.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the cooperative model, the co-op. A lot of these were begun by labor unions.
Yes, in New York City, especially the garment workers created affordable housing that was cooperatively owned. And today, there's certain parts of the nation, the Twin Cities in Minnesota, New York City, that are really into high-rise cooperatives. I also visited cooperatives of manufactured housing, what some people think of as trailer parks. And again, having the cooperative ownership gave people much more a sense of control over their destinies, and they found they actually grew closer because of that cooperative ownership.
And it makes it more affordable for many of them.
It's so much more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all, not the co-housing so much, but most of the models I write about are affordable, like house sharing is a really good example of an affordable way to live.
And you talk about house sharing, that people are sharing houses not just with their friends, but sometimes with complete strangers.
Yes, and there's a real model for this in Baltimore, St. Ambrose, a nonprofit that links older homeowners who are at risk of losing their home with younger renters, and these great bonds form across the generations, and it opens up a source of affordable housing for the younger people.
One of the most fascinating stories you tell is about a place called Hope Meadows.
Oh.
They took over, or they reconfigured an Air Force base, the Chanute Air Force Base. It's out in the Midwest. And these are this is a community of foster children that senior citizens are moving in to assist with the care of these children. Tell us about that.
This is an intentional community, and there's now several in the United States, and one is coming to Washington, actually. It's an intentional community that supports families who are adopting kids out of the foster care system. And one of the main ways they support these families is the Hope Meadows community. About two-thirds of the members are 55 and older. And so they become like bonus grandparents to these children. It is so inspiring and heartwarming. The older people get to live there for greatly reduced rent in exchange for volunteering a lot of time with the families. And one statistic, nationally, 30% of kids in the foster care system graduate from high school. 100% of these kids are graduating. And what they're creating is normalcy, permanence, love, affection across the generations. It's amazing.
Yeah, so just as the foster children get parents through this system, mm-hmm. they also get grandparents.
Exactly.
And they live in this place, this community that has old people and young people interacting all the time. And the people apply, the older people apply mm-hmm. to be part of this program. And part of the application, they want to make sure that their people, you know, this altruistic bone is prevalent in the body, right? They want to make sure that they're inclined to help.
Right. I mean, you have to sign a contract saying I forget the number of hours per week, but that you mm-hmm. will really commit to the community.
Yeah. There's one you write about a model called NORCS, the Naturally Occurring Retirement Community. So these are things that just sort of people look around and say, hey, guess what? We're retired.
We're getting old.
And here we are. So how do those work?
Well, Greenbelt has a great NORC. And these are, it's kind of like the village model. People are staying put. But in this case, instead of creating a membership organization, in Greenbelt's case, the city of Greenbelt said, you know what, we're going to support our older residents to stay here. So they created a whole raft of supportive services. The city hired 1.5 staff people. This is not a huge, costly item. And she makes sure that whatever services people need who want to remain in their own homes, that she gets for them. And again, they have a huge volunteer bank there. It's all about creating community.
Mm-hmm. There are some communities or some people who are reconfiguring homes, individual homes, to make them more accessible and easier. And this is a growing industry, isn't it?
It is a growing industry. And it's also related to a growing movement to make our cities more age-friendly. So you can't just fix up your house. It won't help you if you walk out your door and you trip on the sidewalk, or you can't get to public transportation. So it's really a very holistic development we're seeing.
You write about a doctor in Maine, a guy named Alan Teal, who is trying to sort of reimagine what it means to grow older and what it means to live in your own home. And it seems like he's having some success.
Some real success at really, truly keeping people out of nursing homes. And he's combining off-the-shelf technology, webcams, very simple technology with a core of people who said, I'll do a little bit to help this older person stay connected. And it's a very affordable way for people to stay in their own homes.
Well, Beth Baker, thanks for your time. This is a fascinating book. It's well-researched and beautifully written.
So thank you so much.
I appreciate it. It's good to talk to you. Beth Baker, the book is called With a Little Help from Our Friends, Creating Community as We Grow Older. It's published by Vanderbilt University Press. And we've got a link to Beth Baker's website and more information about the book on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.